UpSpotting 131.
Monday, September 19th, 2011.
My hands are a little dirty. So am I.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Movie Monday, and we got to take in a new film out this past weekend called Drive.
That's right. It's directed by Nicolas Winding Refn, and he's a Danish director known for the Pusher movies and Bronson, neither of which I have to admit that I've seen. Drive was actually adapted from a book by James Salas from 2005, and the setup is pretty simple. It's about a Hollywood stunt performer who moonlights as a getaway driver, but he finds himself the target after a heist goes bad. Jen, how did you like Drive?
I don't know. This film was not at all what I expected.
I agree with that.
Very surprising. It's a throwback film in a way that I didn't really anticipate. I had heard a little bit about it, and I had heard some references to 80s style, and it's just incredibly violent, but very stylish, and it's very unique. I'm glad that we saw it.
Yeah, it's a film that I was surprised by. I didn't know exactly what I expected. I think the previews did pretty much paint a conventional action flick with maybe a little more darkness, a little more violence to it, but it was way different from anything that I've seen in a long time. And I agree, you know, it's a total throwback from the opening title font, the pink sort of script handwriting that made me think of, I don't know, Miami Vice or something, the heavy synth score, and even Ryan Gosling, who's the lead in this film, he's wearing this jacket, satin jacket with a scorpion on it, and it looks like he's walked out of some cheesy 70s, 80s film.
And the funny thing is nobody remarks on this jacket. Nobody seems to have any questions about it. They don't seem to notice that it's an anachronism.
Yeah, I mean, everything is taken at face value, and that's what I love about it. I love any film that, no matter how unusual or strange or even surreal, if people just take everything at face value. And if it wasn't for the fact that they use cell phones or they make a back reference to the 80s, you could see that this film could have taken place in the 80s, even though it is a modern film. It is that out of place or that out of time. I would say, I mean, we recently thought of a list of our favorite LA movies that made you think or have a sense of Los Angeles.
Right.
I think that Drive is definitely a great LA film.
It's also a good car movie, which I also appreciate. I really love any film with beautiful cars in it. I love films that celebrate cars, any kind of classic automobiles.
Yeah, and in fact, Refn said that he was inspired by Bullet, you know, the Steve McQueen film from the 60s.
Yeah, I can
and
see that.
I see a lot of that here, the shots inside the car with the rearview mirror, the driving shots, some of the road shots, certainly a tribute. So I agree, it's a great car film.
There's also a scene that was shot where Thunder Road is in the movie Grease.
Oh, the concrete sort of drainage canal.
Right.
Yeah, that's in the film. It's also a bit of a heist film, of course. He's a getaway driver, so there is some chasing, but there's a lot of tension, a lot of suspense. In fact, the opening sequence of this film I liked. In fact, I was really in love with this film for the first hour or so, but that opening sequence, we see Gosling on the job. It's a very taut, tense series of events. It's not flashy. It's not a chase scene in the conventional sense. It's more like a chess game. It's very strategic and very, you know, very tense. I like that. So Drive is a great exploration. It's a very deliberate, completely unabashed, you know, shameless statement of style from this director. Ironically, it was kind of so distinct and unique that I couldn't find a way to put it into words without comparing it to the work of other directors. I saw a little bit of Tarantino here, but, you know, without the witty dialogue. In fact, nobody really talks very much in this film, so there's not that. And definitely not the really clever, you know, winks at the camera going on here, but in terms of really playing with a big canvas, a colorful canvas, and doing something different, I think certainly that's what Refn was doing.
Well, Tarantino is really fond of time shifts and playing with the plot and changing around the way things happen in the film, and this is more of a story, and it's a more, to me, sincere exploration of a certain style.
Absolutely. It's very straightforward. I mean, it's a beginning-to-end film, but I felt a little bit of Michael Mann in it, you know. Again, well, we're talking Michael Mann from the early 80s and a little bit of John Carpenter. It had a lot of great filmic elements that made me think of other directors, other producers, other movies, and yet the reason why I enjoyed it so much is that it was so clearly, or it seemed like, the voice of one person. It was that coherent and that deliberate, and I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too, and we touched on the car element and the LA element, but to me, the plot is straight from a Western.
Huh.
because I think the closest thing that you can get to a cowboy in a modern day film set in Los Angeles is a stunt driver, which is the Ryan Gosling's character's occupation. And what he does in this film is he repeatedly puts himself in harm's way to protect the life of a young woman and her child.
I can see some of that. I mean, but this is not, you know, he's not the charismatic, charming sort of cowboy that we're talking about. This is more of the misunderstood, very dark, potentially dangerous, you know, perhaps unstable, but someone who does feel a higher calling and is perhaps drawn out of his comfort zone to do the right thing. And, you know, certainly the LA in this film is so gritty and so real and so omnipresent and a little oppressive that I can kind of see that maybe as the Old West in a way. I talked about the great opening sequence. There are just so many scenes in this film that are burned into my mind. I loved the cinematography of this film. The city scenes, like I said, are very real. I mean, they're not blurring out signs or coming up with fake businesses or anything. These are real locations. The homes or the stores or the grocery stores, they look used and live in. I mean, it had really rich production design that perhaps just came from using real places in Los Angeles, but that was an important part, I think, in setting the scene for this film.
And it's not just what you see in the shot, but what he chooses to do with the camera. The really long takes and some of the off-center shots were really impressive.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Some very artistic sort of positionings of characters and props and things on the screen, everything off to one side. One thing that he does a few times and well early on is he gives you a very static shot and then suddenly the camera pivots and turns to something that was off screen. And he only does it a few times. It's not a gimmick in the sense that once he reveals that he might do that, for the rest of the film, I found myself wondering, what's off screen when we're seeing this? What might we be missing? What is the character looking at that we're not seeing? And that kind of ratcheted up the tension, and I think that was really effectively done. They work with lights, they work with shadows, and I haven't seen a film that made me so conscious of choice in like camera placement and lighting and you know, how a camera pans in a long time. It sounds like it might be gimmicky, but it's not, because I just feel the director or the producer or the creators of this film are making bold choices, are committed to it, and it gets right to the heart. I love it.
Speaking of bold choices, what about that soundtrack?
Absolutely. In fact, that's why I said Michael Mann, perhaps. It reminded me of Manhunter and some of those films from the 80s where the music is so prominent, so loud. It's distracting, but not in a ham-handed way, just in a very deliberate and purposeful way.
And there's a lot of silence, like a lot of silence. In fact, Gosling uses silence so much in this movie, I expect one of the characters to go, "Speak up! What is wrong with you?" There's just so many scenes where people are just looking at each other, and it's a little bit unnerving, but it's also, it's kind of something you become aware of, that people don't use silence like that in real life.
Absolutely. This is a great combination of long silences and really prominent music. There's a song called A Real Hero by College and Electric Youth, another one by Kavinsky called Night Call, that film, that song only came out last year, but it seems like it was an 80s sort of synth robotic voice song.
Very much.
And they don't build up to something. They don't, you know, telegraph something that's coming. He really just sets it down to set the mood and to set the scene. And I like that. It's not something that you see much of anymore, especially after we just discussed how other movies might use soundtracks and songs in there as needle drops. This is a different philosophy, but I love it. But we do have to talk about this film was also violent. There's a surprising, a shocking amount of violence in this film.
There are gallons of fake blood used in this film. And what makes the violence unnerving is that it comes mostly in the last half of the film. And
right.
The first half of the film is really actually kind of sweet, because Ryan Gosling's character kind of develops this relationship with Carey Mulligan's character. Carey Mulligan plays his neighbor, and she has a small child, and he's getting to know Carey Mulligan, and they're getting kind of close, and he really develops almost an attachment to this child. And the first half of the film is an exploration of that.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like it's a different film, and then it makes sort of a sharp left turn, not a really bad or awful left turn. I think that what I like about the violence, if you can like violence, is because it escalates so quickly, how it emerges and how it develops from the situation. I mean, you have Ryan Gosling's character, very reserved, very quiet, someone who, as a getaway driver, has distinct rules and seems like somebody who doesn't want to get his hands dirty. You know,
right.
He just, I'm going to do my job, you guys deal with the messy stuff. And it turns out he's willing to make that leap into the messy stuff if he has to. And it is very over the top. He pushes it to a certain point and goes goes beyond where you think the violence will go. And that's why I liked it in a way, because it was so shocking. There's gun violence. When the guns go off, you jump in your seat. You know, some things are just so totally unexpected. Very, very much used effectively. I mean, one scene in this film takes place in an elevator. It's one of the main scenes of the movie. Unfortunately, they kind of put it in the previews as well, so we're not giving too much away. But that scene alone is an example of how this film can swerve wildly from what might be kind of a character exploration of will they or won't they romantic or sexual tension, straight over to the over-the-top violence.
It swerves right from kind of sweet and tender to absolutely horrific. I think it's one of the most shocking and horrific scenes I've seen in a film in a long time.
Yeah, and you know, the director or the cinematographer plays with the lights. They do some really unusual things there, and the romantic element lingers so long that it's almost uncomfortable, and you're starting to squirm in your seat. And then, but you know that it's going to go bad. It does go bad, and how? So certainly a great example of what you see throughout this movie. There is some in your face gore. I agree. You know, gallons of fake blood, like you said. The gun violence is pretty shocking, but I also like that it's not all like that. There's some implied violence. Certainly the tension is in part the threat that's posed to the sweet young mother and their son, and to, of course, Ryan Gosling's character. There's a scene where you don't see what happens. You just see the shadows on the ground of what's going on, and you don't even know which person is which until you remember that Ryan Gosling as a driver has leather gloves, and you see the gloves in the back pocket in the shadow, and that's how you know how that's turning out. I mean, just little touches like that are great. But you know what? We've talked a lot about the presentation of this film, the wrapping, the look of it, the feel of it, the sound of it, the violence in it. But we really should talk about the performances as well, because any film like this has to hang on them. And I think central to the success or failure of this film is going to be your favorite, Ryan Gosling. How do you think that he did in Drive?
I take back everything I said about him in my review of Crazy Stupid Love. I said I didn't like him, and then he had three expressions, and I really changed my mind about him in this film.
I liked him in this movie. In fact, I liked him in this movie better than I liked him in Crazy Stupid Love, like you. In fact, I'm beginning to think that I like him more the less he talks. and maybe in a talky romantic comedy, he's just not in his place. And here, he doesn't talk much at all. And I think that's to his benefit.
But he acts with his face. He acts with his eyes. I really feel like if you really look closely at his face and at his eyes, that really tells you all of the things that he's thinking that he can't really say.
Well, you know, he's playing like somebody who does act with his eyes and his face, but I'm not sure if he's really there. I would say that he still does have only a few expressions, and we see that in this film. He's pretty stoic. I imagine the director is basically saying, I want you to hold this gaze for 20 seconds, and that's a long 20 seconds, and then slightly crack a smile, and then we're going to wait 5 seconds and end the scene. I mean, there's some of that. It gets a little tiresome, but again, I do think that there's something there. I think Gosling, this is a good performance for him. But Carey Mulligan as the love interest in this film, you know, we loved her. She was a revelation in an education. How do you think she fit in this much more darker, grittier world of Drive?
She's freaking amazing. I loved her in this film. She's so pretty. She's so expressive. The way she looks at certain characters at certain times of the movie is really heartbreaking. Like, there's a one scene we were talking about, silences and awkward pauses, and there's one scene where she's saying goodnight to Ryan Gosling's character after they spend a day together, and he looks at her in a certain way and she looks at him in a certain way, and it gave me shivers. And I think she's the best part of this film.
Absolutely. In fact, I think she's basically acting circles with her face or her eyes right around Ryan Gosling. She is fantastic. You know, almost too delicate, I would say, for this world and this movie, but because she comes across as so vulnerable, I think that's why you believe that a character like Ryan Gosling's will cross over to the other side, will get his hands dirty to do the right thing, because she needs to be protected. I thought she was fantastic. But the supporting cast, I mean, some wonderful familiar faces here. You had Clay from Sons of Anarchy.
Ron Perlman. Yeah. He is so scary in this film. I mean, with Clay at least has some sort of a moral compass. He he's not always the nicest guy, but he knows what he wants to do, at least to protect his family and his club. The character he plays in this film is just loathsome.
Absolutely. He's ugly. I mean, just plain ugly, but he's great at it. I mean, he only needs to be in a room for you to know that something bad is happening or is about to happen. Also in this film, Walter White from Breaking Bad, Bryan Cranston, and I thought that he was, in a way, kind of a similar character in this film.
He's similar to me in that Walter White thinks he knows what's going on. He thinks he's hip and that he can be a mentor to Jesse, but in reality, Walter White is a high school chemistry teacher, and he doesn't know a whole lot about the streets, and I think this character is a little like that.
Yeah, I feel it. I mean, he's basically in over his head. He thinks he's a mentor to Ryan Gosling's character. He thinks he's the one showing the guy the ropes and how the world works, but it turns out that Gosling has a much better feel for what's going on and pretty much how things are going to end well before Bryan Cranston's character in it. And also, highly billed in this film is Christina Hendricks. Now, she was from Mad Men, I think, most prominently. She was also in ER and we saw her, of course, in Firefly. I think safe to say, you know, emphasize more for her looks sometimes than her ability to act. But I think here she's trying to do something very different. You know, she's not Bryan Cranston and doing a variation on her character. At least she's trying to do something different in Drive.
Well, anybody who's coming into this film looking for her to play a really big part will be sorely disappointed because she's really in the film for maybe 15 minutes total. Right. And it's not a very glamorous part and it's not a very sexy part. I think they're really trying to downplay Christina Hendricks' looks in order to get to the heart of this character, but I don't think they really succeed because it's really hard to make Christina Hendricks unsexy. I mean, she's like the real life Jessica Rabbit.
Yes, she is. I mean, I will admit, you know, they were going out of their way to do something different with her here. I did like it, and although she's not in there long, the way she exits the film is unforgettable, shall we say.
Yes.
And speaking of playing against type, who turns up in this film but Albert Brooks? Al Brooks as Bernie. You know, I mean, he's here, he's a bad guy, but not just like sort of the Weasley bad guy that he was in Out of Sight. I mean, here, I'd say a much more shorter path to evil for this character for Al Brooks.
I really think of him as a Woody Allen type character, somebody who does really well in comedies, and it seems like he's only taken on roles like this in the latter part of his career, and it's kind of interesting to see him do things like this.
And I thought that he was good. In fact, you know, he speaks more than anybody else in this film. He's the talky one. He's the one that if you're waiting and hungry for dialogue, which you might be, he's the one who just, you know, periodically will step in to fill that silence, and yet when he does, you might regret really hearing the bad news. But I really like that turn by Al Brooks. But great performances all around, in I think our opinion, strong, committed performances for very intense characters. I mean, we didn't even get around to Carey Mulligan's husband's character, Oscar Isaac, playing Standard, and you know, a tragic figure, a guy trying to do the right thing, a father trying to turn his life around, but he simply doesn't have that option.
Standard. That's another thing I wanted to mention about this movie is every character has a really strange first name, like Standard, and then Carey Mulligan's character is named Irene, and Christina Hendricks' character is called Blanche. I mean, when's the last time you saw a movie with characters named Blanche and Irene, especially ones that are so young? And the best part to me is Ryan Gosling's character doesn't even have a name.
Yeah, the main character is unnamed. They refer to as the driver, of course, or even kid, but not given a name. But kind of clever, and I like just very, very deliberate choices on the names.
Well, that's definitely a throwback to Clint Eastwood.
Oh, well, yeah, so that kind of gives you the Western feel.
Yeah.
I think you're onto something there for sure. So that is Drive in very wide release. It's fascinating. It's a total indie-style film with that kind of disregard for convention, and yet it has the punch of a blockbuster. And I think, you know, it's good to know that it's different when you walk in. The screening we went to opening night, like 20 people through the first half hour of the film walked out of it.
I think that's partially because of the marketing. I think they were expecting more of an action film, and it really does not kick in until halfway through.
Yeah, it's very thoughtful, very pensive, very somber and dark. And I think some people might lose patience with it, but I'd say stick with it. It's a film I'm glad I saw, but one I'm not sure I need to see more than once.
It's definitely a one-timer for me.
It leaves a very strong impression. I think I just need to hear that music again, and I'll see everything in my mind that I want to see again. But if you have an open mind, if you're really curious about really distinct statements and styles, somebody that's really willing to buck convention, we would recommend it. But do we have a score out of 5 for Drive?
4.5.
That's a high order. I'll give it a solid 4 as well. That's 8.5 from Pop Spotting for Drive. We're going to be back next week for Movie Monday looking at the new film Moneyball. But whether you see Moneyball or Drive, if you've gone out and taken it in, you can call us up and let us know what you thought. You can leave a voicemail on any topic at 815-310-0808.
You can also leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net or drop us a line at feedback@popspotting.net.
We would love it if you would like us and share us with your friends on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com/popspotting, or if you tweet, we can tweet at each other or retweet each other at twitter.com/popspotting.
If you're having trouble keeping up with our show, you can sign up to get an email every time we post a new show. It's just one of many ways to stay connected with us. Just head on over to popspotting.net/subscribe.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday, where we're going to take a look ahead at the new fall TV season. We want to say thank you to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and we really want to say mahalo to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Tofa.
Tofa. What's tofa?
Goodbye.
In